Ladies and gentlemen, theys and thems, weavers of all races and subclasses, welcome to This Dungeon is Occupied. My name is Illidine, and together with Thorn and Bone Daddy as your hosts, we wish to help you as players and game masters, from the aspiring to the veteran, with questions, ideas, and interviews for your next tabletop role-playing game experience.
So no soundboard needed.
Yeah, so that's why we paid Hobby Hub to help us with our intro music, so that we don't have to do that. But hello, welcome to the beginning of this episode of This Dungeon is Occupied podcast. We are talking about new versus veteran players versus our friend group, and how we differ in our processes for story weaving. We do have an episode about San Japan, and talking about how Bone Daddy and I went and volunteered for brand new players and veteran players that we had no idea who they were, complete strangers, and met some awesome people. So we can go ahead and talk about that a little bit. Bone Daddy, what was the thing that, when you first got to the table, what was your experience like talking to these people and figuring out that either A, half your table was new, or brand new players completely all around?
Yeah, I really had to distinguish who was the newer players and who were the veteran players. That's only because with newer players, I had to really, what I found is, and what I really had to do is cut out a lot of content. So, like, especially with things that I added into the stories that they gave us, which is also in that episode, because some of those stories were a little I had to cut out some content, because with newer players, you know, it's a lot of the time is taken up with, like, can you explain this to me? What does this attack do? What does this creature do? What was the name again? Like, newer players don't have that grasp on, like, note-taking, and also they don't have that knowledge in front of their head. As with veteran players, with the veteran players, I could be like, oh, I'm doing this to you, and they kind of understood the language and the keywords that were associated with what I was doing. So mm-hmm. A lot of it was cropping my content, like making sure that the story had less complicated features, which was something I'll give the credit to, that the stories at Sound Japan that they provided with us offered side notes about that. They were like, oh, you can add this in or subtract this from here if this person's new or this person's not. So that's kind of what I had to do. I just kind of established everybody who was new and who were veteran players. And I was like, okay, this is how much content I need to put in here. And this is what I'm working with. So
yeah. And I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, we have to figure out, especially newer players, and also strangers, learning what their boundaries are, what veils they have as far as, like, hard stops on horror scenes and what they want to be allowed at the table, such things. But yeah, like you said, that. Yeah, like you said, it's more of, you have to understand that, especially during combat, your combats are going to be longer with newer players than veteran players. It's just a fact of life.
Yeah, I mean, it's a learning curve. So all the math I have to do, remembering what each of their attacks does, as well as the dynamic that happens in battle. It's a lot to remember. It's a lot to keep track of, especially for story weavers as well. Yeah, yeah. And it takes up so much of your time. So really with new players, you have to be sure that you they kind of understand what they can do next and what's going on, and be prepared for tons of questions.
Yeah. Thorne, how do you deal with that?
And I've played with completely new groups, and I prefer not to do that. Let me put it out there, because it's taxing and it's frustrating, not to so much to me, but to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have only me to ask the questions for, and they don't want to ask questions because they think they sound stupid, and it could be a whole thing. But what I tend to do when I get a new group, like a brand new, never played before group of players, I will simplify the rules. Mm-hmm. And I will make it more about the story than the roles.
Sure.
And the reason I do that is because I'm very comfortable in World of Darkness. Now, World of Darkness plays more to the story than the roles. Mm-hmm. The roles are actually very simplified. Because you can do a complex action, and if you have a stat for it, or if there's not even a stat, the next best thing, and just roll a few dice, and you succeed or you don't.
Right. Yeah.
But with D&D, at least especially in the older versions, 5 seems to be a lot more simpler in the rules.
Oh, yeah.
So, but if it was like 3.5, oh, Jesus. Hey, I wouldn't mess with new players. AD&D.
Thaco.
Yeah, no, AD&D was interesting. It's hard to even remember AD&D mechanics anymore compared to what they are now.
Yeah.
But new players, yeah, be ready for the questions. Then just remember, no question is stupid. They want to know. If they're asking, they genuinely want to know. And take as much time as you need. Be prepared for either a very long game or just not to make it very far in that first session.
Yeah, and I think an important thing is, you know, we talked about tools that a DM needs or a story weaver needs, like the Player's Handbook and the Dungeon Master's Guide. Having those available, even if it's just the PDFs online, I mean, you can get them on D&D Beyond and stuff like that. Having those handy and saying, you know, if somebody asks a rule, and even as a story weaver, sometimes I forget, you know, certain spells or certain rules about actions and stuff. Having that available as a little, you know, hey, I'm going to just really quick, I'm going to look at the table of contents, go to that spot, and then we can continue. And what I've seen on Reddit and stuff like that is that there are little tips and trick cards that people have written to like attach to the DM screen if it's something that you tend to forget a lot as a story weaver, such as like what spells you can cast during an action or a bonus action if you've already cast a spell, which is cantrips. You can have that little sticky note right there on your DM screen, and that way you're not spending as much time going through 300 pages in the handbook, but just having those little notes.
And honestly, if you have the handbooks, like the hardback, the actual paper copies, man, let your new players look at them.
Mm-hmm.
While they're waiting for their turn, you know, here, look at this combat, you know, see if you can figure out how it works, you know, let them look at it and discover it for themselves. And if you have D&D Beyond, you can actually share it with other players. And that's great. Cause if you got tablets, man, that's the way to go.
Yeah. And, you know, as a veteran story weaver, because you'll notice when you first start story weaving or dungeon mastering, you are going to be reading the book a lot. You're going to be going back and forth to the Player's Handbook, to the Dungeon Master's Guide, figuring out the rules. The most important thing that I always tell newer story weavers is just wing it, honestly. If you know a little bit about the basics, because there's like 2 pages about combat that is important. There's 20 pages about it, really, but there's only like the first 2 pages that explains what an action is, what a bonus action, that kind of stuff. If you know the basics 101, you can even look at, I've seen hundreds of YouTube videos that have like a 5-minute explanations of what to do in combat and things that are allowed. If you know the basics, you can wing the rest of it. Just make a call. And you know, we always say that it's better to have RP than it is to have mechanics. So just like Thorne said about switching the roles and simplifying it, if a player asks, you know, hey, can I do a somersault over this werewolf and stab him in the back? Sure. Yeah, do it. Go ahead. And then you're only asking him to do an attack roll. Whereas if you were doing a veteran player, he would do an acrobatics roll and then an attack roll to see if he, you know, lands that super cool flip. So it's just a matter of simplifying and knowing things. But as you go along, my hardcover has notes, you know, written in them. There's I have sticky notes that are bookmarks. I have sticky notes that are like little footnotes that I've written. Cause at first I started writing in the book, and then it hurt my soul as a, as a reader. So I just use sticky notes now.
My hardcover is no longer attached to the inner contents.
Exactly. You just keep, you constantly use it. And it's not like you have to sit there and study for hours on end. It's just like, oh, okay. In the moment you go and you open it up and you look at the thing that you're looking at, and then, okay, that's going to be important for later. Boom, sticky note, write on it, whatever. But you're constantly going to be opening that. The bindings on my books are done.
Yeah.
So,
and with, let me put a side note.
Yeah.
If you get the chance to do a mixtable, new and veteran, which to me that's the perfect content, because if you do that, you don't have to deal with the new players as much, because you're like, here, he's been playing for this many years. Let him help you.
Yeah.
He'll help you. And we have players that are very, very good at that.
Mm-hmm.
Forrest is amazing at helping new players. He really does. He really excels at new players.
Yeah. And it's nice, because it does take a lot of that stress off of the story weaver. You know, not that we're not wanting to help the new players, but we still want to facilitate a good game for everyone at the table. And, you know, as Thorne said earlier, it's frustrating for the new player when they're constantly having to ask questions, even though there's nothing wrong with asking questions. It's still something that can be frustrating. And then it also does slow down the game if the story weaver is only the only person answering questions. If there's a couple of veterans, you know, like we have, like he said, we have Forrest. If a new player has a question, we sit Forrest right next to them. They can whisper back and forth. The story weaver can continue the story. And it makes it a lot smoother.
Okay. So next is the pro table, the DM table, the table full of people that know better than to do the shit they're doing
and still do it.
We'll do it anyway.
Bone Daddy. What do you think when you sit down with a table of pure veterans, you know, the shortest length of player has been like 6-7 years playing D&D, been DMing for three of them. I mean, and then you have somebody like me who's, you know, been going for 30 years and DMing for like 25 of them. I mean, what do you expect and what do you do to a table like that?
I mean, the only thing, so the biggest hiccup that I found with tables like that is that they know everything already. So what am I going to throw at them? Am I going to throw like a troll at them? They know what a troll's weaknesses are. Like, they know the dragons in and out. They know how abilities work. They know how we're going to, combat's going to work. Like, how do I keep a table like that on their feet? And what I like to do is sometimes I like to add and subtract abilities from monsters during combat.
Yes.
However, that throws veteran players off their feet, because they're like, oh, when did it do that? And I'm like, well, I might have redesigned it a little bit, just so you know. So that keeps veteran players on their feet during combat. And the cool thing is that combat moves a little quicker with veteran players, because they have their abilities already kind of memorized. They know what things do. It might take a little bit of time to kind of think their plan out, but they're a little quicker. Like, they don't ask a lot of questions. Not that it's a bad thing, but they're a little faster when it comes to making decisions, because they know what their plan. They know what their plan is. They know what their character does, because they've played this game forever. But it also makes for very interesting and more complex stories. Mm-hmm. So especially with role play, when it comes to role play, with veteran players, they've seen a lot of stuff. Like, they've seen a lot of different stories. They've seen a lot of things happen. So it allows me to pull up the stops for a complicated story. Like, I can pull out a more complicated mystery, because, you know, I love mysteries. And you can pull out a more complicated, like, story dialogue. It's more heart-wrenching tales. Like, you don't have to not hold your punches, but you don't have to cut extra content out to simplify the game, you know? You can add more complex things from the system. And they'll understand where that's coming from, and they'll understand how to approach it. And so that makes games like that just a little more chaotic.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, like you said, it's nice to be able to have a much more complicated game. You know, like I run a game of full DMs and story weavers, like the entire table except for one player. And so I can throw in that extra puzzle because my group likes it. I can throw in that that extra strong homebrew monster that I came up with or came across on Reddit and was like, oh, this is OP. Throw it
F
at my
that
table.
Tree. F that tree.
That tree was awesome.
Fuck it. I said fuck it.
So the tree that he's talking about, there was a Reddit post about an exploding tree that is actually a real tree, and somebody decided to stat it in D&D, and it is the dumbest in the best sense of stat blocks for a fucking tree. And you know, it explodes, there's piercing damage, there's residual poison effects. It was stupid good. And they walked through a full forest of it and had to, you know, there was a lot of DCs that had to be done.
Oh man.
Yeah, it was fun. But you know, that's the thing that you can do with veterans. And kind of segueing into veterans / people who you play with a lot. If you have a friend group like the way we do, where we've been playing together for 5 years ish,
close to, yeah.
Yeah. And all of us have, you know, a decent amount of experience playing. So not only are we veterans, but we've also been playing together a lot. So that allows us to learn a lot of the boundaries that we can go past and push a little bit. You know, things like body horror for Bone Daddy.
I hate body horror so much.
Yeah. So, you know, but that's the thing is, like, I know that Bone Daddy likes body horror and Thorn doesn't necessarily. So I can play in that gray area and, you know, not go overboard with details, but still get into it. And, you know, it's not going to offend anybody. And getting into a lot stronger, plot hooks, things that, you know, we do get into a lot of politics that are very familiar to us at the table, but in a fantasy setting. So, you know, we have dealt with some racism, we've dealt with subterfuge, you know, we've dealt with the Game of Thrones style of politics and things, and it doesn't bother anyone because we've been there. We know what we can do and where we can push things.
Now for me, for the pro table, let's call it the pro table, it's like, the you know, these are the guys that have been playing for a while. Mm-hmm. And they're DMs, GMs, story weavers, whatever you want to call them. Excuse me. But the thing I like about it the most, the thing that I look forward to the most, is this is the table that's going to give you the most unique and interesting players. They're going to give you these characters that are just so thought of, and there's backstories, and it's immersive. The first time I met Illidan was playing World of Darkness. He typed out a 2-page backstory for his guy.
Yeah, that was short. I was a little upset about that.
That was the first time we met. I was like, I think I'm going to like this guy. And I mean, then you get, you know, Bone Daddy down there with like a decayed lion zombie with wasps. I mean, you just get these unique players. And as everybody knows, my thing is RP. Mm-hmm. I love RP. So it gives you much more unique RP opportunities. Because you can throw these guys into situations that they got to talk their way out of.
Yeah.
There's no way to fight your way out of this. You have to talk your way out of, or that wouldn't be so fair to a new group.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. That wouldn't.
Because their new players tend to be shy about the way they talk. Now I don't do voices because I sound stupid doing voices. I don't have that ability. People have it and it's awesome. Yeah. I don't. So all my players sound like me, but I will talk my way out of situations like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
Because I can talk as a player. as that character. I can talk as that character, maybe not in the voice, but I'm talking as that character. So that, like, my favorite characters that I played that bounced off, I played twins, and they would have one-on-one conversations. So I would talk to myself for like 5 minutes.
Which he's used to. I mean, he does that in real life as well.
It's the voices. I tell you now, it's the voices. They never shut up.
But, you know, and it is, speaking of voices, just a really quick aside for the newer DMs, you do not have to do voices. You don't have to do anything. You can make your game the way you want to do it, and find players who enjoy your content. However, if you're going to do some attempt to an NPC, if you can't do voices like Thorne, it's more about the mannerisms. It's about how you word things. If you have an intelligent NPC, you're using a little bit more eloquent words. If you're, you know, if it's a peasant and hasn't had any education, you're talking a little bit more with that kind of accent, quote unquote. And the way I use a lot of body language when I'm role playing with my table, if I'm playing, you know, a debonair NPC, I'm going to slouch a little bit in my chair with my arm over the back. Maybe I'm holding my drinking cup or something. And the body language itself lends to the role player and gets to immerse the players a little bit more. So just something simple like that, where I'm not even changing my voice, but my mannerisms and body language that I'm using for that player or for that NPC, it does enough, and it gets the story across and the point across.
And to that point, like when Rick and Tara was talking, you knew who was talking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tobin, he speaks faster than everybody, and he's very random. So yeah. You can separate your characters by the way they talk. It doesn't have to be accents or voices, just the cadence.
Yeah.
Makes a huge difference.
I love using the really like cutesy voices where like, I'm just like, oh my God. And like the expression and like when I was having a role play with someone at our table and I was doing the jumping jacks and the exercises.
Yes. Yes. So the reason why that is funny is because Bone Daddy plays a Luxodon rogue, which is a gigantic elephant, obviously. So when he's rolling stealth and when he's doing acrobatics and things like that, it's funny that he is passing all of the DCs as an elephant. and it's just, and that's the thing that, you know, Thorne was talking about having veteran players and also a friend group, is that we can do some wacky shit. You can get chaotic. You can do things, you know, I know Thorne very purposefully throws wrenches into my campaign because it's fun.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I deny. My lawyer told me to do that.
Yeah, that's true. You know, being able to improv off of each other, especially like I said, with friends, you can improv a lot. But even with new players, you can improv just a little bit. You know, if you remember the yes ands and the no buts, that's very simple, overused language for improv, but it works. That's why it's called a cliche, because it works. And being able to give a little bit of agency to your players makes the game go smoothly. I mean, Thorne, one of our first sessions for Arc 3, he came up with this group of mercenary warlocks and we hadn't even talked to me about it. It was just happened during role play, and I had to make my notes and like, all right, well, I'm completing this now. I'm gonna write that later, you know.
and that's what you can do with especially a friend group.
Yeah.
Like, I knew he would bounce off it. If I started it, I knew he would come up with stuff too. So we just bounced it back and forth with each other for like 5 minutes during gameplay and came up with a whole group.
Yeah.
I think when you were playing in my game, Thorne, I think you also came up with like your own like demon or god or something.
Oh,
I was like, yeah, I was like, that's cool. I'm just gonna give me 1 minute.
I did that, yes.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing to remember, and we are actually going to do a whole episode on it, but the biggest thing to remember as a story weaver and as a player is that we cannot all be Matt Mercers. We cannot all be Brennan Lee Mulligans or any of the other very famous professional DMs and voice actors. I mean, Travis in Critical Role playing Grog, you can't expect even a veteran player to be up to that level, purely because, one, we don't get paid for it. And if you do, tell me how. I would, you know, that's what we want to do, is have this as a full-time job, right? But we don't right now. So practicing lines and practicing voices and things like that isn't something that we can do all the time. You have to, you know, that's Brennan talks about his bathroom times when he during a round table with Matt Mercer. He talks about when he's practicing voices, he's just talking to himself in the bathroom, because that's the time that he had when he was a kid, and he just kept doing it. And so you can't, you just don't expect to be at that level. And you don't, you know, I guess it's called the Matt Mercer effect, right? We don't want to get disappointed that we come to, especially if we pay for a game, we don't want to expect a Matt Mercer and not get that. It's something that you kind of have to work through at the table and just understand who your story weaver is and who your players are.
And the thing about that is, a lot of it is just, they've been paid for so long just to do D&D.
Right.
Now, don't get me wrong. I've been playing for a long time as a player in a story weaver, but it wasn't all day, every day.
Yeah, we have jobs.
Exactly. And I haven't played like when I was in high school and stuff. I would go over to my DM's house in high school, and we would play from Friday till Sunday.
Yeah.
And I'm talking like maybe sleep a couple hours in between. We would just play the whole time.
Yeah, eating during. We don't take breaks for food.
No, I mean, that's just the way it was. Well, right. It was pizza. His parents would order pizza, and we'd keep like three large down there, just chow on it for three days, just
yep.
Eating cold pizza. But that's what it was like back then. Once I hit like 18, I had a job. I couldn't do that shit no more.
Yeah.
But the thing is a comfort level. Matt Mercer, mm-hmm. Brandley Mulligan, all them guys, they're very comfortable with the voices part of it. They're very comfortable with the acting part of it. You know, whereas like somebody like me, I'm really comfortable with coming up with shit on the fly.
Yeah.
And I'm really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I play with very good story weavers in these two that they don't, I mean, it might throw them for a loop for a little bit, but they'll come up and they'll be like, okay, let's do this, 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 that. And it makes it more comfortable. That's the benefit of playing with a friend group.
Yeah.
It's a much bigger comfort level. Bone Daddy?
Just the, you're right, the comfort level and the ideas that like coming from playing in a friends group are amazing. Like just being able to, you mentioned that being able to come improv off the cusp with each other is just fantastic, especially with us when we play together. We're always bouncing ideas off one another and just creating new things in each other's worlds randomly. And we're okay with that too. That's half the fun of playing together. So,
yeah, I mean, that's why we've chosen to call ourselves story weavers instead of dungeon masters, because we're weaving the players' stories together and creating that grander, big picture story. And you could still do that with newer players. Like, I don't want this episode to seem like, oh, yeah, I never want to play with new players. I think that it's more of a don't be afraid to do anything, including with new players, you know, barring, you know, their hard stops and their limits. But talk to your group. That's why, you know, we have an episode on session zero. That is the most important session you'll ever have in any group, whether it's new, veteran, or friend groups. Just to know.
And we do session zeros with our friends.
Yeah.
We and have session zeros.
Oftentimes it's every session. We have a small 15-minute session zero talking about things, and it, you know, a lot of times it's a recap of what happened last session, but we still talk about the things that are happening, and, you know, learning a little bit more, asking questions about character backstories and things. Session zeros are of the utmost importance, especially when you want to have fun and do crazy things. It doesn't always have to be following Horde of the Dragon Queen's module again and again and again. You can change that module to something else. You can make it a space adventure, or you could make it a level 20 campaign. I don't recommend it, but you can.
That's an episode in itself. Modules versus, you know, like homebrew.
Yeah.
But final thoughts.
Final thoughts for me. I say just do it. Just start. Just do the thing. If you're a new story weaver or a new player, either find a group or find your friends that you've been talking to about D&D or any other tabletop role-playing game, and just get the basics. I mean, you can find the PDF oftentimes for free, or at least for a discounted price than the hardcover, and just do it. And, you know, read a little bit and then have fun with it. That's the biggest thing. Bone Daddy?
I think the biggest thing for me is just... So, like we mentioned previously, just make sure that you gauge your new players, your veteran players, just kind of get everyone's heart stops as well. And I just think have fun. Like, I mean, it's depending on what kind of game you want to play, you might want to think about what kind of type of players that you want to have. But I recommend playing with your friends, because your friends always lead to some pretty fun and creative things.
And for my final thoughts, I think the most important thing that you can do is play with new players. You want to get more and more people into this beautiful game. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter their age, because I've talked with in the past 2 weeks with 30, 35 year olds about playing D&D for the first time. Yeah. And it's beautiful. I want new players. And I come from a time when I was started playing during the Satanic Panic, to now where there's like big time actors, and Matt Mercer and Brandon Lee Morgan, they couldn't have been anything back in the 80s.
Yeah.
That wouldn't have happened. And everybody's watching Stranger Things and the Hellfire Club and all that Satanic Panic stuff. That's actually what it was like back then. Mm-hmm. People were freaking out about this stuff. And to now, when it's very accepted, there's mainstream platforms. We're getting a movie. A good movie, finally, with mainstream actors.
Yeah.
Coming out in May 2023. Seeing the first, TikTok thing they had for their characters. Amazing. I think Chris Pine's playing a bard.
Oh, nice. Yeah. It looks really cool. Did you see the Displacer Beast?
Yes.
The Black Dragon, the Gold Dragon, the Mimic.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, my God. I'm so excited.
So, I mean, we're getting this, and like every D&D nerd everywhere is just fangirling over this, just these posters and this little 30-second TikTok stream. I mean, it's such a difference, and it makes me feel so good about it.
Yeah. And the thing is the more people we can get into it, the more content we will eventually get. Because, I mean, WotC, as big as they are, they will not create more content if they're not making profit. That's business, right? So we have to get new players. So
yeah, new players to me are the most important. I personally, for playing as long as I have, I will play with as many new players as need to be had, and I will teach them about this beautiful game.
Yeah.
Because to me, it's life-changing and it's fun. So, yeah. I mean, that's that.
That's that. If we missed anything, if you guys want to add something to this podcast, email us at thisdungeonisoccupiedpodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to review. We have an immense growth recently that we are super excited about. One of our episodes has almost reached 100 downloads just by itself. In the last 5 days, we had over 150 downloads. Yeah, it really is. It's super sexy. And we can't thank you guys enough for listening and sharing the podcast. And if you guys leave us a review, not only will we thank you, but we'll also read the review on the podcast and give you a shout out on the episode. And I mean, that's it. Remember to check your dungeons. This dungeon is occupied.
Bye.
What's up, Weavers of the Realm? As always, thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoyed this episode. If you haven't already, click that like button and subscribe or follow us on your chosen platforms. It goes a long way to help us grow. And if you liked the intro music that we just used, it was made with the help of The Hobby Hub on YouTube and Saturn Imaging Production Company. Also, if you want exclusive content like NPC of the Week, Discord access, and behind the scenes, join our Patreon at patreon.com/thisdungeonisoccupiedpodcast. And of course, the link to our merch store, social medias, and all the other podcast platforms are available on our link tree in the show notes. Good luck in your games, steal everything, and have fun.